This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Corinthians. Now here's Pastor Sandy in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 as he begins his message, The Message of the Cross.
Hey, there are certain products that are sure sells. The demand is so great, Walmart doesn't even have to run a special. On my first trip to the island of Haiti, I ate the local food. And after 7 days of mystery meat, I was so hungry, I would have given my right arm for a Big Mac. If the Domino's pizza man had stood on my doorstep, he could have named his price. There are situations where a product becomes an easy sell. You'd think when God strategized salvation, he would have offered a plan so appealing that it would have sold itself. No reason to preach and plead. The need would be so apparent, the solution so attractive, as soon as you set it on the shelf, folks would scoop it up. Salvation would be hard to keep in stock. You'd think God would dream up a salvation that made for an easy sell. Yet God did just the opposite. The means that God devised to forgive us of our sin and make us his children and clean up our lives and guarantee us a home in heaven, rather than sell itself, actually provokes an initial repulsion and a resistance. You'd think God would have prescribed a salvation as a tasty, cherry-flavored elixir, something that goes down smoothly. But to the contrary, salvation comes in a pill the size of a golf ball. God deliberately made salvation tough to swallow. You have to gulp hard to get it down. You see, the message of the cross is not palatable to human tastes. Unlike an accessory to our wardrobe, the cross doesn't go with the thing you're wearing. For most people, it clashes with where they're at and with what they're into. In a society that idolizes style and that values vogue, the cross is like an ugly shirt stain you hope is far enough down that you can tuck it into your pants so that no one notices. The message of the cross is an offense to human sensibilities, and that is exactly as God planned. God never intended for salvation to sell itself. God designed the cross to be an affront to all that we hold dear. It defies our pride, and it flies in the face of our values, and it shakes up our status quo. You'd think God would have concocted it differently, but you'd thunk wrong. The trend in churches today is to be trendy. We tend to value relevance above all other traits. It seems it's all about being hip and cool and polished and non-offensive. Today's churches are most often measured by how well they relate to the secular culture around them and the size of the crowd that might attract. And understand, I'm not against being relevant. I believe our job is to bring the changeless gospel to a changing world. God's truth is timeless and timely. In fact, when God became man, he connected with his audience. He was relating firsthand to the human plight. He was empathizing with folks, feeling for them, relating to them. This is a big part of Christian ministry. But realize, the incarnation was not an end in itself, for Jesus was born to die. His coming to earth led to his crucifixion. God knew that relevance doesn't produce righteousness, that salvation demanded a sacrifice. Though the ministry of Jesus began with his relating to mankind, it ended with him doing what no one else could do. Relevance gave way to holiness. It was a means to an end, but it was never an end in itself. And yet when a church values relevance above all else, it inevitably shies away from the message of the cross. For the cross is not relevant to today's culture, or to any culture for that matter. It is an offense to all that humans hold dear. A church that's all about slick presentations and engaging entertainment and how-to suggestions and self-massaging sermons to the neglect of the cross has missed the whole point of why it even exists. Without the message of the cross, pastors are just babysitters, and churches become country clubs. Years ago, Richard Niebuhr warned of a Christianity that preaches a God without wrath, trying to bring men without sin into a kingdom without judgment through the ministry of a Christ without a cross. And tragically, this is happening in churches today. Reminds me of the British Chapel. Its stone walls were covered with ivy. Over an arch were engraved the words, "We preach Christ crucified." And the men that founded that church did. They preached the cross. But over time, the ivy grew along the arch and covered the word crucified so that the arch read, "We preach Christ." And this reflected what had happened to the church's message. They spoke of Christ now, but as an example, a servant, a humanitarian. Over the years, the ivy continued to grow until finally it covered up the word Christ so that it read, "We preach." And that's what the church does today. It's abandoned the message of the cross, and it preaches current events and pop psychology and social issues. Let's never forget the message that God uses to forgive sin and save souls and renew minds and transform lives and heal hurts is the cross of Jesus Christ. In this morning's text, the Apostle Paul tells us why God offers salvation through the message of the cross. Paul gives the Corinthians four reasons. First, the cross shocks our senses. Second, the cross blocks our pride. Third, the cross mocks our values. And fourth, the cross locks our hearts. I want us to work line by line through our text this morning and pick out each of these reasons in detail. First, the cross was intended to be a shock to our senses. You know, today in many ways, the cross has been sanitized and popularized and even secularized. But in the beginning of Christianity, the cross of Jesus was a shock to our sense of decorum. It was an ugly, grotesque, disgusting, revolting, repulsive, disturbing kind of thing. You remember in the famous hymn, "The Old Rugged Cross," author George Bernard describes the cross of Jesus as the emblem of suffering and shame. Verse 18 tells us, "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God." Paul says that to those who are perishing, the message of the cross is utter foolishness. And to those who are being saved, the message is utter power. But no one who sees the cross for what it is can ignore it or simply toss it aside as a mere relic. The cross is in your face, man. It has to be reckoned with. God intends for the cross to shock our senses and to grab our attention. You know, today celebrities, they wear crosses tattooed on their chest. Baseball players cross themselves before they step into the batter's box. Jewelers beat down their gold into earrings and necklaces in the shape of a cross. Even candy makers today market chocolate candy crosses for Christians to eat on Good Friday. But God chose the message of the cross to shock us and to stir us. And that's why Satan has seen to it that the cross has been stripped of much of its shock effect. Many years ago, a cross was erected in a city park in Eugene, Oregon. It became a town landmark. In recent years, this upset some of the opponents of religion who filed a lawsuit to have the cross removed. The court let the cross stay, but listen to their reason. They said, "The cross is simply a symbol, universally accepted. It no longer carries religious significance. Thus, it's allowable on public property." The cross no longer has spiritual connotations? Welcome to our modern world. Reminds me of a woman who walked into a Denver jewelry store. She asked the man at the counter if she could see a gold cross. The man answered, "A plain one or one with a little man on it?" We've been desensitized to the shock of the cross. There was, though, one cross that did provoke the proper reaction. One Easter on a church lawn in Dallas, Texas, a 10-foot-tall cross became the talk of Texas. It stirred controversy and bitter reaction. It upset both church members and atheists alike. Editorials were written. Its photo was in the newspaper and on TV. Outraged people called the local talk shows to vent their anger. What made the cross so controversial was it consisted of weapons that had been confiscated by the Dallas PD. Guns and pistols and knives and bayonets and bullets and bomb fragments, even broken bottles. In fact, the base of the cross consisted of a totaled out car ripped apart in a DUI accident. The display was surrounded by barbed wire entanglements, the kind you'd see outside of a prison. The good people of Dallas started a petition to have this ugly cross removed. People called it a desecration. Someone even said, "How can you turn the cross of Christ into a symbol of violence and pain and suffering? Excuse me?" If you were around in the first century AD, that is exactly how you would have seen the cross. The cross was the most hideous, torturous form of execution ever devised. Josephus, the famous Jewish historian who saw firsthand his share of actual crosses, called the cross the most wretched of deaths. Cicero wanted Roman citizens sheltered from even the sight of a cross. He wrote, "The idea of a cross should never come near the bodies of Romans, never pass through their thoughts or eyes or ears." Even members of the early church were repulsed by the cross. Did you know the cross was banned from depiction in the arts for the first four centuries of church history? Not until the Emperor Constantine abolished crucifixion as a form of execution was the cross turned into an emblem of the church. C.S. Lewis once pointed out, "The crucifixion did not become common in art until all who had seen a real one had died off." If you were standing before a live crucifixion, you would shiver in horror. You would turn your head. It would turn your stomach. You'd have nightmares for weeks afterwards. Imagine me walking into the church one Sunday wearing a little gold electric chair on my lapel, or a silver hypodermic needle on a gold chain around my neck. Would you be offended? Jewelry in the form of an instrument of death, people today would be appalled. When Paul wrote to the Corinthians about the message of the cross, it was the equivalent of me writing to you about the message of the electric chair. Have you ever happened on a traffic accident after the fact? I mean, a few seconds after it happened, you drive past the tangled metal, broken glasses everywhere, tire marks are tattooed to the street, and you sum up the situation, you shudder. Wow, something serious just happened here. Lives have forever been altered. Eternity might have been populated. And this is the conclusion that God intends for you and I to draw when we hear the message of the cross. When we see the Roman cross standing against that dark Jerusalem sky on that lonely hill called Calvary, God wants us to think this was not just business as usual. Something heavy happened here. Reminds me of the mom and the little girl on their way to the zoo. It was during Easter week, and as they drove past church after church, the little girl counted up the crosses. She said, "Mommy, how many times did Jesus die?" Her mom answered, "Only once, dear." Well, the daughter replied, "Well, then why are there so many crosses?" The mother answered, "To help us remember how much Jesus loved us. He died on the cross in our place." Well, the little girl was up in arms. She shouted, "How could we ever forget something like that?" And indeed, how can we? That's what God thought when he packaged salvation in the message of the cross. The cross was intended to shock our senses and to grab our attention. That's not all. In verse 19, Paul quotes Isaiah 29, "For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent." The cross shocks our senses, but then second, it blocks our pride. Paul is quite bold here. He claims that through the cross, God intended to destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. The cross of Jesus was designed by God to wipe out all vestiges of human ego and arrogance. At the foot of the cross, Paul taunts the smartest humans. Verse 20, where is the wise? He calls out the, quote, experts to try and refute God's work on the cross. Where is the scribe? He challenges the university professors, the academics. Put the cross under your microscope and see if you can dissect its power. Where is the disputer of this age? Paul says, bring on the debaters and all the quick-witted talk show hosts and let them try to dismiss the cross with their sarcasm. Paul pits the wisdom of the boastful up against the power of the cross, and he concludes, has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? Not even humanity's brightest can get their minds around the wisdom of God. The brilliance of the cross humbles us. Paul continues in verse 21, for since in the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God. Notice God is not against wisdom. He's not against education or human learning. God just didn't choose these things as vehicles for communicating divine knowledge. The Greek master Socrates once said, oh, that someone would arise to show us God. Well, Paul lived 500 years after Socrates, and Greece was still in the dark. Paul is in essence saying, if God can be known through man's wisdom, then why are the world's wisest standing around talking about God rather than talking to God? You see, the reason is that it's the cross, not wisdom, that lets us know God. Understand, the cross is an anomaly in the history of God. It's an aberration. It's not what we would anticipate from God. It's a twist in the plot that we didn't expect. God is all-powerful. He is all-wise. God destroys the wicked and he vindicates the righteous. So why does he let his only son die at the hands of evil men? See, the cross was like a smoke detector going off in your house. It's like an engine light illuminating on your dashboard. It's God screaming out that something has gone wrong. The cross is, in essence, God saying, man has a problem and it won't get better on its own. In essence, the cross is an affront to our ability to fix things. Man can't fix this. He can't fix himself. And he needs drastic measures. Several years ago, we had a problem with the sliding door on our minivan. I'm not a very mechanically oriented guy, and so my wife took it to two mechanically oriented friends of ours, and neither one of them could repair it. My dad, who is the world's ultimate handyman, worked 2 days trying to fix that door, but failed. Well, that's when I told Kathy that I would take care of this van myself. I didn't tell her my plan was to take it to the nearby body shop. The guys there got it functional in about 5 minutes. But when I returned home, Kathy was gone. So I decided to stick some tools in my back pocket and just kind of wait beside the van. And when she drove up, there I was standing next to the repaired van. She was happy to see that the door was fixed, but trust me, she didn't buy my story. I tried to convince her that I had repaired the van myself. And hey, if I could have gotten away with it, if I could have taken credit for that fixed door, I probably would have. I mean, what's the crime in being a hero in your wife's eyes every once in a while? I mean, all men want their wife and kids to think there's nothing in the world that they can't fix. But that's exactly why God devised the cross. For one look at Jesus on the cross, behold the bleeding wounds in his hands and in his feet. His eyes rolled back in his head, blood oozing out of the punctures in his forehead. Watch Jesus in excruciating pain as he hikes himself up on the spikes to grab another breath. At the cross, you realize, I can't fix this. If you could fix your sin-wrecked soul, if you could repair your broken heart, if you could clean up your record and whitewash your dirty mind, then Jesus would have never had to go there. The cross would have been unnecessary. The cross was intended to humble us. If salvation came through power, we'd all start lifting weights. If it came through knowledge, we'd all go back to school. But since salvation comes through the cross of Christ, there is nothing we can do but sit there and behold his blood-soaked body and believe in the crucified Christ. Well, the cross, it puts us in our place. Paul finishes verse 21. It pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. The cross destroys all pride. The cross sees to it that once and for all, that God is known not through human achievement or through human knowledge, but through simple faith. Simple faith. In Rembrandt's painting of the crucifixion, he has the dying Savior lifted up on the cross. You also see the expressions of various bystanders. But in the center of the painting, in the blue cap, you see Rembrandt himself. The painter realized that we all belong in the crucifixion scene, that it's my sin and that's your sin that nailed Jesus to the tree. See, the cross happened because you and I needed it to happen. We couldn't fix ourselves, and so Jesus did. But not only does the cross shock our senses and block our pride, but God also intended for the cross to mock our values. For on the cross, it was as if God was destroying all of man's family heirlooms, all of our treasures. He took all of our worldly values and he, in essence, trashed them. Verse 22 tells us, "For Jews request a sign, and Greeks seek after wisdom." See, the Jews and the Greeks, they represented the two poles of human values. And it's fitting that they expected from God what they valued most. Thus, the Jews wanted a sign, for they were into power. The Greeks sought wisdom, for they were into knowledge. But the cross appealed to neither power or knowledge. In fact, to the Jews, the cross was an indication of weakness. And to the Greeks, it was an act of foolishness. God gave them both the exact opposite of what they wanted. On the cross, it was as if God were scoffing at what both Jews and Greeks valued most. Again, the Jews were into power. Their greatest heroes were known for their powerful exploits. I mean, Moses parted a sea, and Joshua won military victories, and Samson was a one-man Philistine wrecking crew. David, a giant killer. Elijah called fire from heaven. And the Jews wanted a Messiah who was just as powerful as the heroes of their past. That's why it's no surprise the masses who followed Jesus, as long as he multiplied the loaves and the fishes, oh, they followed him. As long as he worked miracles. But once they realized that political power was not his chief concern, they started jumping off the bandwagon. See, Jews wanted a Savior with some punch, not a suffering servant. And again, the Greeks were into knowledge. Remember, these were the descendants of Socrates and Plato. The Greeks were antiquity's great philosophers. Did you know in Athens, the favorite pastime was carefully crafting your philosophy, then debating it on Mars Hill with the resident scholars? Yet where is the brilliance? Where is the sophistication, the intellectual triumph in the cross? Rather than a stroke of genius, the cross seemed like a gigantic mistake. To the Greeks, if God had authored the cross, then God is prone to mistakes and accidents.
Today's message on Sandy Adams Radio may be ending, but you don't have to stop studying the book of 1 Corinthians. We encourage you to keep reading, keep learning, and to apply all you find to your walk with Christ. If you'd like to listen to more of Pastor Sandy's teachings from this book, you'll be able to find them at sandyadams.org. We also have a mobile app you're welcome to download. This will keep sound biblical teaching with you in every situation, every day. You'll find a link to download on our website. Again, that's sandyadams.org. Don't forget to stop by the shop on our website as well. We have several resources available for purchase, including books authored by Pastor Sandy. Do you live in the Atlanta area, or will you be visiting soon? If so, we'd love to meet you in person. Come join us at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain on Sundays at 9:30 or 11:15 a.m. for a time of worship, Bible study, and fellowship. Come just as you are. You'll find you're among friends here. For driving directions, go to sandyadams.org or give us a call at 770-736-2828. That's 770-736-2828. And when you call, please let us know how we can be lifting you up in prayer during this in-depth study of the book of 1 Corinthians. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in for this edition of Sandy Adams Radio.